relate to any of you? Can any of you relate to that song? You reach a place where we say, there ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy, there's only you and me, and we just disagree. Any of you ever been in a situation like that? Some of you have, haven't you? You have not. Good for you. I'm glad you have not. But most of us have been there. How many of you have noticed that there are people out there who are different from you? And you notice, okay, good, you're with me now. How many of you have ever tried to change that person who is different from you? Okay, we have. Now, think about it. How often has it worked? Never, thank you, that's the right answer. It doesn't work. No matter how hard we try to change those other people, most of us in our human natural sense, most of us end up saying like the words of that song. There's only you and me, and we just disagree. And we end up going our separate ways, don't we? If any of you are in a relationship right now, whether it's a marriage relationship or a work relationship or a friend relationship, and you're at that place now where you're thinking, you know what? We just disagree. We're just going to go our different ways. I hope today that you will think differently about that relationship, and then I'm going to give you some tools that will help you with that, because you know what? Going our separate ways is the human way to handle it. But you know what? That's not His way to handle it. There's a verse in the Bible that I hope you will learn today that will ring in your ears throughout the day, and when you're in a difficult relationship, that these words will come back to your mind, that the Holy Spirit will bring them to you. The verse that I hope you'll learn today is Romans 12:18. And Romans 12:18 says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. And I love how that verse breaks down into those three parts. Because the first part says, if possible. It's like God is giving us a disclaimer. It's like He's saying, I know you can't do this, but this is a goal. This is something you should strive for. This is something you should try to achieve, if possible. The second part says, so far as it depends on you. Now, what does that tell us? Whose responsibility is it? Ours. It's our responsibility to change, to adjust, not to try to change those other people, but to change ourselves so that, the third part of the verse, which is, be at peace with all men. Now, if you're a student of God's Word, you know that God never tells us to do something that we cannot do. And if that verse simply said, be at peace with all men, that's something we can't do. Because haven't most of you noticed that there are those certain people in your life that no matter how hard you try, no matter how nice you are, no matter how good you are, they don't want to be gotten along with? There are just those people, you know, and you can't do anything to fix it because they want to be difficult. They want to be not gotten along with. But if possible, so far as it depends on you, each one of us need to do what we can do to improve our relationships with people so that we don't just agree to disagree and go our separate ways, that we can improve our relationships with others. What we're going to look at today is an old concept that hopefully I'll give you a little bit of a new spin on. After the first service, I talked to many people who said things like, I've heard something like this at work, but today I learned from you something new. This is an old concept. We're going to look at different personality types. And I like to use the original terms of the different personality styles that were originated more than 2,000 years ago before Christ. The great Greek thinker Hippocrates noticed that there were people out there who were different. And he tried to figure out what made them different from one another. And he came up with some names. Now, as I use these terms that I'm going to use today, I use the original Greek terms that Hippocrates used, but I add to them a modern day adjective. And then we're going to give to them a color as well. If you've heard this kind of teaching from some other source at work or in another church or in some other setting, that's okay. Just translate as we go along because it's all the same basic stuff. But you know what? It's not about labels. It's about relationships. The labels just give us a vocabulary that we can all communicate together and kind of be on the same page. But it's about relationships. We're going to look at four different kinds of people. And we're going to start by looking at how to identify each of these personality types by what I call the visible clues. Because you see, if you are in a difficult relationship with someone, that person with whom you just want to agree to disagree and go your separate ways, if you're in a difficult relationship with a person, it's probably hard to go up to that person that you're having a tough time with, and you go to them and you say, excuse me, I'm having a tough time with you. Would you take this personality profile so that I can figure you out? Now, you know, if you're having a tough time with someone, that's going to be a little bit awkward, don't you think? You can't do that. Now, we do have a personality profile. They're available out there in the foyer. And in my office, we sell a lot of these at Christmas time because people, like, they have the family all together and they go, oh, let's do this. It'll be fun. Let's figure us out. And it's great in that kind of setting. But if you're in a difficult relationship with someone, it's a little bit awkward to do that. But you know what I found is that if you know what to look for, it's almost easier to identify someone's personality by watching for those visible clues than if you have them take a personality profile. Because, you know, most of us as adults, we have a lot of baggage tied up in who we think we are. There's what our parents wanted us to be, what our teachers wanted us to be, what our bosses wanted us to be, what our spouses want us to be. And so often by the time we become adults, we're not really clear on who we are. Probably most of you have been in a setting like a water cooler conversation where you say to someone that you know something such as, you are so whatever it might be. And that person says back to you, I am not. And everybody else standing around says what? Yes, you are. And you go, really? Am I like that? You see, if you live or work with someone day in and day out, you often know them better than they know themselves because you've seen them at their best and you've seen them at their worst. You know who they really are. You know how they react when they're under pressure. And so if you know what to watch for, you can almost more easily identify someone's personality than if you have them take a personality profile. Now today, we're going to look at how to identify the personality of other people. Chances are, as we talk, you're going to look at your own life and figure out what your personality is as well. But primarily, what we're going to focus on today is the relationships of others. But as you look at your own life, you look at how you're wired, because we come hardwired with a set personality. If any of you have had more than one child, you know that you can have the same child in the same house with the same parents in the same school in the same church, even the same bedroom and the same clothes. And are they the same child? No. Many of you women could tell in the womb, this one is different from the last one, couldn't you? They came hardwired with that personality. But as you look at your own personality, while we're going to spend most of our time today on understanding others, you can't help but figure out yourself, or at least try. As you look at your own personality, while you're hardwired that way, one of the amazing things about us as humans, and especially about us as Christians, is that we can grow and we can mature. That it's not to be an excuse to say, oh, well, that's just the way I'm wired. Get used to it. Yes, we do want to adjust our approach to other people and get used to them. But for you as an individual, you want to grow and mature and become more like Christ. If we were to do a personality profile on the life of Christ, you would find that Christ has the strengths of all four personalities and the weaknesses of none. And so our goal as Christians is to grow and mature and to become more like Christ. So with that introduction, let me introduce you to the first of the four different personality types that we're going to look at is what I call the popular sanguine personality. Now we're starting with this personality not because they're the best or the most important or because it's what I am. We're starting with the popular sanguine personality because it is the most obvious to identify. Now, there's two key things if you're taking notes today that you might want to write down. The first thing that would help you to identify the popular sanguine is that the popular sanguine is loud. Now, Some of you might, just on that one word, be able to identify someone in your life. Those of us who are popular sanguines, we naturally have a loud voice. I talked to several people in the foyer after the first service who said their whole life they've been loud. I talked to a couple that's got a teenage daughter that they have had trouble with, and they said, we now get it. She's that popular sanguine. We are constantly shushing her. How many of you have been shushed most of your life? Okay. Those of us who have been shushed most of our life, no test needed. Those of us who are shushed all the time, we're the popular sanguines because we naturally have that loud voice. Those of us who are popular sanguines also tend to like loud clothing. See, we're afraid of blending in with the woodwork. The last thing in the world we want to do is be normal. And so popular sanguines tend to dress in flashy colors and clothes, even in men. I mentioned a story today, it was funny, in my book, Your Personality Puzzle, Wired That Way is my 19th book, but in my book, Personality Puzzle, I tell a story about two managers at the Vons in San Marcos where I used to live. And I tell a story in there about how one was melancholy and one was the popular sanguine, and the popular sanguine had this necktie with a hula girl on it with a skirt that moved. Well, after the first service, a woman came up to me and she said, did you used to live in this area? I said, yes. She said, because my husband used to be a manager at Vons, and he came home one day and said to me, I'm in a book. And it was her husband with the hula tie. It was so fun to have her here in the audience this morning. But even in men, well, we women have more fashion freedom. Even men, popular sanguine men, they don't want to be put inside a box. Popular sanguines not only have a loud voice and loud clothes, popular sanguines are open. First off, we have an open voice. We like to talk. We like to entertain. We like to fill the dead air. So we have an open mouth. Popular sanguines also have an open life. You know the expression TMI, too much information? That expression was made about popular sanguines. If you are talking to someone and they are telling you way too intimate details about your life and you're kind of going, whoa, I don't want to go there, no test is needed. You have got yourself a popular sanguine because I like to say for us sanguines, we have a very short space between our brain and our mouth. And if a thought comes into our brain, it goes right out our mouth with no processing in between. Also, popular sanguines have open body language. Now, have you watched Jeff up here? You talk about open body language. Jeff could not hold it in if he had to. He cannot stand still. I mean, he's just fun to watch. He's just plain fun to watch. The popular sanguine is the touchy, huggy, kissy, feely kind of person. Now, we popular sanguines, when we hang on to people when we talk, mainly because we are afraid you will leave before we finish telling you the whole story. But popular sanguines are that huggy, touchy, kissy, feely type. Now, moving along, the opposite on the chart, they're arranged that way for a reason, because the perfect melancholy personality is the opposite of the popular sanguine. The popular sanguine we represent with the color yellow, bright, cheery, like the sunshine, the smiley face. The perfect melancholy is the blue, deep blue, thoughtful, introspective, like the ocean. Now, they're the opposite. The popular sanguine is loud, so the perfect melancholy is what? Quiet. The perfect melancholy has a quiet voice. I have a girlfriend who's a perfect melancholy. When I talk to her on the phone, she knows she needs to project because just like we popular sanguines have been shushed our whole life, perfect melancholies their whole life have been told, what? Can't hear you. I'm sorry. This friend of mine, at the beginning of the conversation, I can hear her because she projects. But as she gets comfortable in the conversation, what happens with her voice? Gets softer and quieter. Now, those of us who are popular sanguines, when we get comfortable, what happens to our voice? We get louder. Perfect melancholies get softer because they're naturally quiet. Perfect melancholies also naturally like quiet clothing. This same melancholy friend and I, we went shopping together one day, and I was looking at this cute, fun, hip, trendy kind of outfit, and my perfect melancholy friend said to me, why would you buy that? It's going to be out of style next year. And I thought, oh darn, I'm gonna have to go shopping again next year. I hate it when that happens. But you see, we're wired differently. We come at things from a totally different perspective. This melancholy friend of mine, she said to me, you know, if you buy quality, it really does last. You know that green suit I have? She said, I paid more money for that suit than I probably should have, but I've had it for 6 years and it is still like new. A thought came into my head. Without processing, it came right out of my mouth, and I said, and I am so sick of looking at it. She now will not wear that suit in front of me anymore. So the perfect melancholy has a quiet voice. They like quiet clothes. Perfect melancholy also has a closed mouth. Perfect melancholies truly believe in that adage, silence is golden. Now, the way it tends to work is we tend to marry someone who is opposite from us. The melancholy believes silence is golden. They're married to the popular sanguine. And what do we feel we need to do with silence? Fill it. Exactly. We need to fill that dead air. The perfect melancholy also has a closed life. They're not going to tell you intimate details of their life, even if you are intimate with them. The perfect melancholy also has closed body language. They don't use a lot of gestures. They don't flail about like Jeff up here. Now, did you watch Carlton? Now, Carlton moves, but Carlton does not move like Jeff. Carlton's moves are measured. They're thought through. Every gesture has meaning, and he doesn't flail about wildly. He does wiggle his hips a smidge, but not like Jeff. I mean, Jeff is like out there. You watch them next week with this in mind, and you will see, she is so right. They are so totally. Now you're going to be real self-conscious about that, Carlton. But watching you guys was like, oh, I have such a great pictorial here. I just loved it, having that perfect example. Now, moving along, the powerful choleric is the third most obvious to identify, or the second least obvious, depending upon your perspective. And while there are some clothing clues as well, the powerful choleric, the best way to identify them is by the air when they enter the room. Because a powerful choleric does not enter the room unnoticed. They're the red, like the fire engine. They come in with, you know they have come in. The sirens are blazing. Now, the powerful choleric, when they enter a room, if they are someone who is a positive influence in your life, the powerful choleric brings with them a sense of energy and a sense of excitement. If they are a negative in your life, they bring with them a sense of stress or a sense of tension. But I think one of the reasons that the powerful cholerics do not enter a room unnoticed is primarily the way that the powerful choleric walks. Because the powerful choleric walks like this. And the floor kind of shakes as they go by. Do you know anyone like that? As they go by your desk at work, you can feel the floor shake, and you know they have been there. You know that that person has been there. So the powerful choleric has their body language is really how you identify them. Now, the powerful choleric does have three gestures that are pretty unique to the powerful choleric. And if you have someone in your life who consistently does any one of these three gestures, no test is needed. You have found yourself the powerful choleric personality. First gesture is their finger, usually wagging in your face. You know that expression, in your face? It was made about the powerful cholerics. Now, if you are talking to someone who's a powerful choleric and they are in your face, now I like to think of the perfect melancholy as the greatest respecter of space. When they see us popular sanguines coming at them, hi, 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 so good to see you, they kind of go, hi, nice to see you, as if to say this far and no further. They're the greatest respecter of space. The powerful choleric is the greatest invader of space, and they are in your face. Now, when they are in your face, what do you naturally do? What do? You back up. What do? They come forward. What do? You back up. You find yourself talking to someone and you are like backed up against the wall. No test needed. Only a powerful choleric will do that. The other gestures powerful cholerics do is hands on their hips, usually accompanied by a look that says, how could you be so stupid? I can't believe you did that. Third gesture of the powerful choleric is a fist. Pounding on the desk or the wall. If there's nothing to pound on, they'll pound into their other hand for emphasis. Again, if you know someone that does those, no test needed. Quick clothing clue for you. Powerful cholerics are more concerned with function than with fashion. They will dress to get the job done. For example, some of you ladies may be married to someone who's a powerful choleric and there's a big furniture sale at the store down the street and you want to get a new sofa. And the powerful choleric says to you, I don't know why you think we need a new sofa. That avocado green Naga hide is still perfectly functional. They're more concerned with function than with fashion. The last one we're going to look at is the green, the peaceful phlegmatic. They're that calm presence. You know, in the spring when the fresh green grass comes up and it's freshly mowed, don't you want to just go kind of roll in it because it has that inviting, calming presence? That's how the peaceful phlegmatic is. And we look at them last, not because they're the least important, but because they're the least obvious to identify. You see, all the other three personalities live life in the extreme. The popular sanguine, extremely loud, extremely outgoing, extremely fun-loving. The powerful choleric, extremely strong, extremely driven, extremely goal-oriented. The perfect melancholy, extremely neat, extremely organized, extremely detail-conscious. But the peaceful phlegmatic isn't extremely anything. They're balanced, they're steady, they're consistent, they're even. I like to think of the peaceful phlegmatic as the beauty queen of the personalities. You see, they're not easy to caricature, right? How many of you have seen a caricature artist at work doing the little cartoony things? Most of you have seen that, haven't you? Remember when Ross Perot was running for president? What did all those political cartoons of him show? Ears, because that was an extreme feature. When Bill Clinton was president, what did all the cartoons of him show? His nose, because that was the extreme feature. If you've ever seen a caricature of the beauty queen, like if you were in high school and you went out to the county fair with the prom queen or whatever, and you watch them do a caricature of the beauty queen, they're not really all that funny. Because her proportions are steady, balanced, even, and consistent. They're not as easy to caricature. So for us, in looking at identifying the different personality types, the peaceful phlegmatic is not as easy to identify. Additionally, not only is the peaceful phlegmatic the beauty queen, the peaceful phlegmatic is also what I like to think of as the chameleon. Because they're not extremely anything, they can adjust more easily. I talked to a girl at the break who came up to me and she said, well, I kind of think I'm all four. What do? I can't figure it out. And I talked to her and she was clearly the peaceful phlegmatic with some popular sanguine. So I described that to her and she said, well, yeah, that does sound like me. Because when the need arises as an intelligent human being, she can take a leadership role. But she doesn't need to take a leadership role. See, we powerful cholerics, we take charge even when nobody asked us to, and frankly, when no one wants us to. And we tend to offend people. Peaceful phlegmatics don't have a need to be in charge. One of the greatest qualities of the peaceful phlegmatic is that they are content. They're happy where they are. They don't have a need to change the world. Now, one little quick fashion clue and one body language clue to help you. Notice on the chart, the peaceful phlegmatic is the opposite of the powerful choleric personality. The powerful choleric, when they walk in the room, the air stirs. When the peaceful phlegmatic walks into the room, there's a calming presence. Can you relate to that? You know someone like that? They just bring a sense of calm. Fashion-wise, the peaceful phlegmatic tends to go for comfort rather than fashion. They will go to the most comfortable end of the spectrum for whatever's appropriate attire for that event. Now, I've given you a quick overview of how to identify, by the visible clues, the different personalities. And probably most of you have been able to figure out your friends and family members, your coworkers, based on those quick descriptions. Next, I want to share with you what I call the various clues. That's the various strengths and weaknesses that we all come with. Now, needless to say, as I'm watching my clock here, there's not time to go into the complete strengths and weaknesses of every personality type. But in the profile on the back is a complete listing of the strengths and weaknesses of each personality type. But I'm just going to touch on a couple for each of the personalities here today to kind of help you go, oh yeah, that is so-and-so. Yes, that is my mother. Yes, that is my child. Yes, that is my spouse. The popular sanguine, one of the strengths that we as a popular sanguine have is also kind of a weakness at the same time. We are naturally curious. I remember one day a friend of my husband's was over at our home, and after he left, I made a comment to my husband about him, and I said that this gentleman colored his hair. And my husband said to me, "How do you know?" And I said, "Well, besides the fact that it drips down his face when he sweats," I said, "I saw the box of Just for Men under his sink." Now realize, my husband is a perfect melancholy. How did he feel when his wife says to him that I know what's under the sink in the bathroom in his friend's home? He was mortified. He said, "How do you know what's under his sink?" I said, "Remember that time we were at his house and I had to go use the bathroom? Well, and there were no magazines. And so without thinking, I just opened up, I just looked. I didn't steal anything. I was just curious what's in there." One time I was speaking at a church in Paducah, Kentucky, and they had a shepherd to take care of me, and she had disappeared. I wanted a cup of tea, and I'm roaming through the church. The pastor's wife is there at this refreshment table, and she sees me, the speaker, alone, roaming through the church. And she says, what do you need? And I said, "Well, I'm looking for some water, for some tea." She sends me down to the kitchen. I go down to the kitchen. There's no one there. But I think, I'm a big girl. I see a microwave. I see a stack of styrofoam cups, and I see a sink. Everything I need to produce a cup of water. So I produce the cup of water, but in the microwave it kind of goes for a little bit before it boils. So I'm kind of like, I look above the microwave, the cupboard is open just about yay much. And I see through that cupboard saltine crackers individually wrapped like in a restaurant. Now I do not even like saltine crackers. But what do I do while I'm standing there? What did I do? I open up the cupboard, I'm standing there looking, and when someone comes in, and there I am, the speaker, snooping through the kitchen cabinets. And they say, "Can I help you find?" No, I was just looking, thank you. Those of us who are the popular sanguine, we naturally are curious. Those of us who are popular sanguine, we also tend to volunteer for things. Have you ever noticed that? You're on a committee, I'll do it. That seems like a strength, doesn't it? But if you've been on a committee with those sanguines, I'll do it, what happens? Do they do it? No, they totally forget. They mean well. Believe me, the day they volunteered, they thought they were going to do it. But there's a big problem. Those of us who are popular sanguine, see, we don't have calendars. We don't have lists. We're lucky we know what day it is today. So if you are on a committee with someone and they volunteer to do something, call them the day before if it's important. We will not think you're nagging. Usually you'll hear on the other end of the phone, what will you hear? "I'm so glad you called, I totally forgot." Now, on the flip side, the perfect melancholy likes charts, graphs, and lists. That's part of why we tend to marry each other. We perk them up, they organize us. We have something the other one needs. But the perfect melancholies, they like charts, graphs, and lists. They live life on a schedule. They've got the day all figured out. I was on a radio program in New York one time doing an interview on my book, Personality Puzzle, and a woman called in, and that's the book that's on applying the personalities in the workplace. And she called in and she said, "I've been listening to what you say," and she said, "I think I'm like you, and my business partner is like your husband." And she said, according to what you've said, we're in the right job roles. She said, he's in the office doing the accounting, etc., and I'm out in the field doing the sales. She says, what I want to know is, last week, I had a great sale, a client we've been trying to sell for a long time. And I was all excited, and I came into his office, guess what? And she said, he gave me one of those, if looks could kill, kind of looks. And she said, I don't understand. I had good news to tell him. What did I do wrong? Now, those of you melancholies in the office, you know what she did wrong. In the audience, you know what she did wrong, don't you? What did she do? She interrupted. See, melancholies have a schedule. Melancholies do not multitask well. Melancholies are perfectionists, and they believe that you can only do one thing at a time well. And so they don't like to multitask. He had his day planned. He had his day scheduled. And when she barged into his office, she did what? Interrupted. So I said to her, here's what you need to do. Now that you understand that he's the perfect melancholy, you need to go to his door, and even if the door's open, you knock. And in your best FM DJ voice, say, excuse me, I've got some really good news to tell you. When would be a good time? And then he may say, you know, come back in 10 minutes, let me wrap this up. And then I said, then what you do is you go to your office, you close the door, you dial up your best girlfriend, and you say, you won't believe what just happened to me. But if you want to get the desired response, you have to give them what they need. We need to change our approach to them. So the perfect melancholy likes charts, graphs, and lists, and they're organized and detail conscious. Now the powerful choleric. The powerful choleric has an ability to run anything. The powerful choleric learns very early on in life that, assuming they're at least average or above average intelligence, they learn that they are always what? Right, you got it. You've been with a few of those people, haven't you? Now, you am with that person. You are with that person. So the powerful choleric, they know they are right. And you know what the harsh reality is? What? They are right. You know, and those of us that are living with them, we will get along much easier if we just accept that in the beginning. Just accept they're right. You know what I tell my sisters like this? I tell some of my employees when they have to work with my sister, I say, you know what? Save your brain cells. Just let Lauren do it. Lauren's going to redo whatever you did. She's going to redo it anyway, so don't take offense to it. Just save your brain cells and don't even do it in the first place. Just let Lauren do it. Now, of course, Lauren mutters and complains. Nobody but me does anything around here. But, you know, she's going to redo it anyway, so we just let her do it. Now, if the choleric is always right, you know, they aren't really always right, are they? There are those times in when you're going on with them and you have, let's call it a discussion. And you come to the place in the discussion where the correct thing for them to do is to apologize. What do? If they apologize at all, it's more like this. I'm sorry that you got offended by what I said. And you're like, wait a minute, how did I get to be the bad guy in this? Why do I feel worse now than I did before? Now, most powerful colleagues, they can't get the words I'm sorry out of their mouths, even with that extra to it. Now, we popular sanguines, we will apologize even if we were not in town the day the offense happened. If you will quit whining and cheer up, we will apologize. Because you see, we popular sanguines have an unwritten motto in life, and that is, phony joy is better than genuine depression. We don't care if you're fake, just be happy. I'll apologize, it doesn't matter. But powerful colleagues, they cannot do that. So powerful colleagues, if they apologize at all, it's not really the words, it's a tone. They become solicitous. My husband, he'll do the dishes, you know, which he doesn't normally volunteer to do unless I con him into it. Well, I'll do this if you'll do that. But as an apology, he suddenly becomes solicitous. Well, I've learned to accept that the same as if I was going, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do it. But the powerful choleric, they'll change their tone. So it'll help you. Now, another thing with powerful cholerics is powerful cholerics tend to be unsympathetic. Now, for those of you who can tell that you're at least 50% that powerful choleric personality, how do you view sickness? Sickness is a what? Yeah, it's a weakness. Sickness is a weakness. Only weak people. My husband says of me that I fake well. Powerful cholerics are the only ones that fake well. We might really have a cold, but would we ever fess up to it? No. I think it's just allergies. I have a little sniffle. It's nothing really. You don't need to worry about it. Powerful cholerics, we view sickness as a weakness. Therefore, we tend to be unsympathetic. It's like this Mary Englebright card says. You've probably seen this card. This is a classic choleric Mary Englebright card. Here she's got her hands on her hip. She's got a scowl on her face. And it says across the top, snap out of it. And inside it says, and get well soon. Now that's kind of the powerful choleric's attitude towards sickness. Perhaps you've seen this card. You know Maxine, Hallmark greeting card, shoebox Maxine. Maxine is powerful choleric and perfect melancholy. She is what we would call your classic curmudgeon. She is a melancholy choleric living in her weaknesses. That's not the goal, okay? The goal is to live in your strengths, but she's living in her weaknesses. And this card says on the front, heard you're sick. And inside, the card simply says, wimp. See, that's how the powerful choleric views sickness. Now, the last one, the peaceful phlegmatic. The peaceful phlegmatic can often be a great administrator, a great manager. Often the peaceful phlegmatic in a workplace will get promoted above the powerful choleric, before the powerful choleric. The powerful choleric may have the MBA. The peaceful phlegmatic may have no real education. They started in the mailroom. They got promoted. They got sent to sales training. They got sent to Dale Carnegie. They got moved up into management. And when the time comes to make, do we decide this person to be the VP or this person to be the VP, the peaceful phlegmatic is often promoted ahead of the powerful choleric. And why would that be, do you think? They have no baggage. Everybody likes them. The powerful choleric, while they may have more experience and they may be stronger and more driven, they don't have the negative baggage that goes with, the peaceful phlegmatic doesn't have the negative baggage that goes with the powerful choleric because everybody likes them. That makes them good managers, good administrators. They don't make snap decisions. They evaluate the situation and they will thoughtfully make a decision. Now, that brings us to kind of a negative about the peaceful phlegmatic, which is they have a hard time making decisions. Now, if you're married to someone who's a peaceful phlegmatic, chances are you're going to be the powerful choleric because we do tend to be attracted to someone who's opposite from us. And you say to them, would you like coffee or tea? What do they usually say? I don't care. It doesn't matter. Whichever is easy. And you know what? They really don't care. Do you, peaceful phlegmatics? If you cared, you'd say. But you really don't care. You're just trying to be easy to get along with. Now, those of you powerful cholerics married to that peaceful phlegmatic, you're standing there with a tea kettle. What do you want to do after years of them saying, I don't care, it doesn't matter? What do you want to do? You want to dump that hot water right over their head, don't you? Makes you crazy. But the peaceful phlegmatics really don't care. Now, what we've done here so far is I've told you some funny stories. You've laughed appropriately. I appreciate that as the speaker. We've had a good time. But if we were to end here, we would be on time. But if we were to end here, you would walk out with a label. You would be able to nudge your spouse, as many of you have done as I've seen you, and you would be able to say, well, you're this and I'm this. You'd be able to think of your boss, your employees, your coworkers, your children, and you'd be able to think, well, they're this and they're this and they're this. But remember I said in the beginning, this is not about labels. This is about relationships. You want to take this information and apply it. Take it home and use it. So when you're in those situations where there's just you and me and we just disagree, you don't have to just go away. You can work it out. You can begin to change those relationships. You know the old golden rule that says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you? That's a great rule when we're talking about morals and ethics. But you know what? The people in your life, they're different from you. They're wired that way. They come hardwired with a different personality. And with that personality comes a unique set of emotional needs. The first thing you want to do is begin to identify the personality type of those other people in your life by looking at those visible clues. Then next, you want to begin to adjust your expectations of them as you understand the various strengths and weaknesses that they have. And then lastly, and most importantly, you want to begin to adjust your approach to them. Change how you communicate with them. Change how you react to them. And that's an understanding of the emotional needs. Those of us who are the popular sanguine personality, we need attention and approval. That's why we dress like we do, because we want you to notice us. And if we don't get attention for being good, those of you who are school teachers, what will we do? Get attention for being bad. So give us attention for being good. I was talking to these parents out there in the foyer, and the father admitted he was very melancholy. And with this sanguine child, he won't tell her she's done a good job unless it's really what? Perfect. Is the sanguine child ever going to do it perfectly? No. I said to him, but if you praise her for the partway good job she did, you know what she's going to do tomorrow? You sanguines, what will we do tomorrow? Try harder, right? Oh, I want more of that praise and that attention. Now, popular sanguines, we also want approval. Now, we don't want to have to have done anything to get approval. We just want you to love us, hug us, kiss us, pat us, tell us we did a great job. Now, the powerful choleric needs achievement and appreciation. The powerful choleric has an inner drive to accomplish. The powerful choleric has in their mind a mental checklist. And when the powerful choleric goes to bed at night, they say to themselves, I did this, and I did this, and I did this. And if their mental checklist is not longer than anyone else they know, what are powerful cholerics known to have done? What do? They get out of bed and they go do some more. Because they have this inner drive. It's just themselves. They need to please. But you know what? Those powerful cholerics, they want us to notice what they did. And they want us to give them appreciation for what they did. If you have a powerful choleric in your life, the best thing you can do for them is say to them, I don't know how you do all you do. You're laughing, but try it. Try it. It'll work. Yeah, give me more. Give me more. So they want you to say, oh, this place would fall apart if it were not for you. You are the one that makes everything happen here. They need appreciation. Now, the perfect melancholy needs sensitivity and space. When they hurt, they want you to cry with them. They want you to feel bad with them. Now, they're usually married to someone who is the popular sanguine. And we popular sanguines, we're having a tough time. What do we want people to do for us? Cheer us up. So we try that on our melancholy spouse. We try to get them. We try to jolly them up. Does it work? No. No, they want, but we keep trying it because that's what we want and we don't know better. But you see, you have to, if you understand this, you realize that's not what he or she wants. They need me to hurt when they hurt. They need me to cry when they cry. Tone down, sit down, quiet down, but give them space. Perfect melancholies, strange as it may seem to the rest of us, they like being unhappy. They want to wallow for a while. So we need to give them space to let them live there for a little bit. Now, the peaceful phlegmatic needs respect and a feeling of self-worth. Picture it this way, if you would. You got four children in your family, and this could happen, and you could have one of each personality type, right? And you have the popular sanguine who goes to school, and the popular sanguine comes home and says, guess what, Mom? I got voted the most popular kid in school today. My little nephew, one day, he came home from school, and he said, I am the most popular kid in my school. He said, in my school, they will not have a party without checking with me first to see if I can come. He said, because they know if I can't come, it won't be any fun. And so they check with me first. This same little nephew, one day, I was at my sister's home and we were outside in the jacuzzi one night, and he's standing out there pontificating by the jacuzzi. And he stands there and he's looking up at the stars and he says, my mommy loves me. My daddy loves me. My grammy loves me. My papa loves me. My Aunt Rita loves me. My Uncle Chuck loves me. And he stops and he thinks and he says, the whole world loves me. Now, as a parent, when you have a child like that, don't you have to say, you are so right. Everybody does love you. Then you have the powerful choleric child who comes home from school and says, guess what, Mom? The teacher made me room monitor today. She can tell that if she has to leave the room, I can keep control of that class. In fact, I can't wait for her to have to leave because there's a couple kids in that class she is not doing a very good job with. And I am going to straighten them out. Some of you have a child like that, I can tell. My sister's like that. When she was in nursery school, the teacher told my mother, you know, I never have to worry if I have to miss a day of school because I know Lauren can take charge. Now, if you've got a child like that, don't you kind of have to say, oh, sweetheart, you are so right. She picked the right one. You're probably going to be president one day. Then you've got the perfect melancholy child, like my little brother. Before he goes to school, he makes his bed. My little brother had stripes on his bedspread, and he'd line them all up perfectly. He'd set up his little dolls. A lady at the break gave me this great news story today. She said that her husband, her mother-in-law told her when her husband, who's melancholy, was little, that he was 4 years old and he was crying and fussing, and his mother kept trying to get out of him, "What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong?" Finally, he told her, because you don't get it out of melancholies really easily. They kind of hold that in till they know you really care. And he finally said, "I don't want you to make my bed anymore because you don't do it right." 4 year old, the melancholy's upset with his mother making his bed because he does it wrong. She told me I could use that. So you got the melancholy child. They do everything right at school. The teacher says, "You make my job as a teacher so much easier. If all my kids were just like you, my job would be easy." Comes home, does his homework, does his chores. You don't have to nag him. And mom says, "Oh, my job as a mother would be so much easier if all my kids were just like you." Then you have the peaceful, phlegmatic child. Peaceful, phlegmatic child comes home from school. He didn't win any awards while he was there. He didn't make his bed before he went to school. He comes home from school and heads straight for the refrigerator and then the television. You have to nag them to get their homework done. Can you see where I'm going with this? The peaceful phlegmatic in your life today, whether you're married to them, you work with them, you're friends with them, the peaceful phlegmatic has inside a desperate need for respect and self-worth. Now, inherently, who is the peaceful phlegmatic probably married to in the first marriage? The powerful choleric. What does the powerful choleric respect? Work, production, activity. On their own, without understanding these concepts, is the powerful choleric spouse or boss ever going to give them a sense of respect, sense of self-worth? No, because the peaceful phlegmatic is in a production deficit. It'll be hard for them to get up to zero. So if you don't understand these concepts, can you see how difficult it is? No wonder so many of us reach a place in relationships where we say, "There ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy. There's only you and me, and we just disagree." That's the human way of dealing with relationships. When we get to that place where we just have to say, "You know what? We just disagree," humanly, what do we naturally do? We walk away. We quit the job, we end the marriage, we terminate the friendship. We just walk away. That's the human way. But remember, his way is, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. As you leave this place today, as you deal with those difficult people in your life, whether it's at home, at work, or heaven forbid, even at church, as you deal with those difficult people in your life, I hope the words of that verse echo through your mind. And you think about, what is the personality type? What was that lady talking about on Sunday? Okay, let me think. This person is that kind of personality. So what do I need to do to adjust my approach to them? If you take these ideas, you put them into practice in your life at home, at work, with your friends, at church, wherever your relationships are, you will find that these ideas will help you to fulfill that biblical mandate of Romans 12:18 that says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Be at peace. Thank you.
Thank you, Marita. I'm just glad she said it wasn't about labels, because halfway through her talk, my wife was labeling me. But by the end, Pam just decided I was just a very confused person, but she loved me that way. So that was good. If you want to talk with Marita, or if you'd like to take her home in the form of books and CDs, she will be out in the atrium after the service. I know she would love the opportunity to talk with you. Next week, Darren Whitehead is here. And Darren is the head of youth ministries and the next generation ministries at Willow Creek Community Church outside of Chicago. And he just does an awesome job using multimedia and talking about life and how to work with students and that next generation of people. But if nothing else, come listen to his Australian accent. That's all you need to know. That's worth the price of admission right there. This Wednesday is First Wednesday. It's when we come to the table of the Lord and we have an awesome time of worship music. So I look forward to seeing you there. And finally, last weekend, we shared with you about a need we had for the boys down in the Emmanuel Orphanage in Tijuana. There's 100 boys down there that need backpacks for school and need tuition, and they need uniforms. And we covered 80 of them last week. Left 20. It was absolutely amazing. But that did leave 20. And I think we've covered about half of those between last night and first service this morning. So no pressure, but you're our final hope, okay? I want to clean this thing up this weekend, okay? So if God's laying it on your heart to help those boys down in Tijuana, go out to our missions table and talk to them about how to be of service in that area. Will you stand for our benediction, please? There will be pastors and elders down front if you need prayer. May God bless you and keep you. May he make his face to shine upon you, and may you know his peace. God bless you in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.